and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev. How are you?
I'm just annoyed today. Just really annoyed.
You know, I don't know why I bother asking anymore. I should just start off by saying, hi, Trev, what's up with you this week? Who's annoyed you today?
But I am in a perpetual state of annoyance.
That is, what's happened?
That is my state of mind. Can I just say, I think that's partly being 46 years old. I think it's part of the middle age thing where you just, you're able to take a little step back and you look at the world and you go, God, it's all shit, isn't it? everything annoys me. I mean, everything. Technology's annoying me. God almighty, I've had my fill of technology over the last couple of weeks. I won't bore you with all the details, but I bought a new computer for a lot of money. It's not quite doing what I've wanted to do properly, so that's annoying.
When you say you won't bore me with the details, you're not talking to me, are you? You're talking to the dear listener, because you have bored me with the details of this many times over.
No, I'm not talking to you. I'm just explaining to the listener. They don't want to hear me talking in depth about a computer. There are probably podcasts where that happens. I've been trying to book a doctor's appointment today using all the technologies available, an app, the online thing. None of it works. You go through the whole process of filling in all the form, right? One of them's quite long-winded as well. You've got to go through all this. And then it pops up at the end and goes, oh, I'm sorry, no appointments can be found. Please phone your surgery. You think, what was the point of giving me an app? What is the point of the answer phone at the surgery saying, please use the app, when the app doesn't fucking work?
I've got two things, one good, one bad, about technology with doctors and things.
Yeah,
there's this app I use to reorder my medication that I'll need now apparently forever. So I can just press a button on my app and it'll just reorder it and send it to my local pharmacy, and I go up there and pick it up when they text me. It's fantastic. It cuts out the gatekeeper of the doctor's receptionist.
Yes, no, that's fine. That's absolutely, yeah, that's good.
The other one is, soon, in the upcoming months, I'll be able to get my driver's license back. Mm. However, the DVLA might require some proof that I've been no more problems with the old noodle. No, the old brain still ticking over okay.
Mm. I'm not sure you're going to get that. Okay.
So I sort of phoned up the doctors and I said, I don't want to delay this any further than it needs to be delayed already. So I'm going to send the DVLA my medical records straight away to cut out the middleman of them and then having to contact you. I'll just send it directly to them. How long will it take if I request that from the doctor to get only the last 12 months of medical notes? Not even medical notes, really. Just a little sentence from the doctor saying, no more brain activities that are problematic. He's all right. How long would that process take? Trev, place your bets.
Oh, well, I mean, obviously, you've got to put the request in. That's got to be filtered through. The doctor's probably going to think about it. Someone's got to
find. So that's an email on my part that I could knock out in 2 minutes.
Yeah, you're looking at least 6 months before you get anything back, I'd imagine.
28 days.
28 days? Well, that's quite good, I'd say.
That's reasonable. For three words, yeah, he's fine. In fact, I could speed up that by two. I could make that even faster. He's fine, or even just fine. That'll do. One word, fine.
I tell you what, I would question a doctor that's just writing, yeah, he's fine. If that's what you're, just yeah, he's all right. I mean, that's one. It doesn't sound too assured. It's like, yeah, he's all right. I think he'll be all right. Stick him behind a wheel, see what happens.
Do you reckon that the DVLA would check that it was my actual GP? Could you knock me up an email saying, you know, from Dr. T. Smith, MD or GP or whatever? I'm Ben's doctor. Yeah, I reckon he's fine. Yeah, let him drive. That's fine.
Well, I think they need something a little bit more official than just T. Smith GP.
GPMD?
GPMD. I think they need a bit more than that.
Sir Dr. Trevor Smith, MBE, OBE, CBE.
Well, again, they probably have ways of checking that that's true or not. And, you know, they'd phone Buckingham Palace and say, we're just checking. I mean, when I say phone Buckingham Palace, like, they're not speaking to the king or anything. They're just getting through to admin, right? And they say, we just want to check. Is there a Dr. T. Smith who's achieved all of the honours and he's now sir, he's on the top of the tree? Can you just check that? You can imagine someone on the end going, oh, just bear with a sweat moment, sir, you should check the records.
I know this is a complete tangent, but if you were to get an MBE and then a CBE and an OBE and then a knighthood, would you stick all of those letters at the end of your name, or would you just go with the most prestigious?
I don't know. See, I think what happens is if you, the higher up the ladder you go, you sort of remove the one that's been replaced. You know what I mean? So I think if you're... or maybe you do. Maybe you do put them all down. I don't know. I just assume that you just put the highest one, the latest one you've got, because it sort of outranks all the others. But do you... I suppose you still... If you get, like, a knighthood, but you've had an MBE, you're still a holder of the MBE. That's not removed, is it? So I guess you can put them all. You can put them all there, all the letters.
The only example I can think of this is when Sir Alan Sugar became Lord Alan Sugar. And we don't call him Sir Lord Alan Sugar, do we? We call him Lord Sugar now. He's not Sir Sugar anymore, is he?
Oh, well, that's true, but then... So if you become a lord, are you no longer a knight? Is that what we're saying? That would make sense, wouldn't it? Because a knight, historically, would have been a warrior. And the moment you become a lord, you wouldn't be fighting necessarily, although kings, you know, would have graced the battlefields themselves, wouldn't they? So your social status didn't matter in terms of being on the battlefield.
So do you reckon Sir Alan had to give his horse back?
I feel like this has turned into a real sort of historic podcast. It's like we need Dr. Alex Roberts, MBE. I don't know if she is MBE.
So Sir Alan Sugar might have had to give his horse and his sword back. I wonder if his tax deductible could help him with his tax bills.
All right, he'd probably slaughter the horse and sell it as Amstrad meat, something like that. It's sort of a very, you know, pile it high, sell it cheap meat.
I mean, I don't know if that's libelous, but I hope he'd appreciate the entrepreneurial aspect of it.
Yeah, I think he would. I think he'd look at that and go, it's a great idea. You're hired.
Yeah. So anyway, back to what we were saying. I thought that was outrageous, 28 days for a simple request from the GP, but you know, I'll take it. It's fine. I've got nothing but time on my hands anyway. But you're not thrilled with technology, medicine.
Oh, I tell you the other anything. Thing that's annoying me today is this whole royal photograph fiasco. I mean, I cannot believe with all that's going on in the world, with everything, all the horrors that are happening in the world right now, and the people that are in real turmoil, that the headline news all day today has been the photograph of royal family members might have been slightly adapted for some reason. Nobody knows how. This is Kate, I was going to call her Middleton. She's not Middleton anymore, of course. She's Kate Windsor, the Princess of Wales. She said, oh, and I've tried a little bit of photo editing. I don't know what the problem was initially. I think it was something to do with where one of her hands were or something. So who cares? Who cares? Like, this is not headline fucking news. Photographs. So it's not like even a photograph of, like, if it had been doctored to have her next to Vladimir Putin, do you know what I mean? That might have been a problem. Or next to Hitler, like Photoshop Hitler in to the picture. I could see that being a problem. But just mother with her children in sort of a photograph, just fucking shut up about it. I know I'm talking about it now, but what is the furore about? I don't get it.
Can you please be a little bit more respectful towards the royals? Because, you know, you're shitting on my chances of a knighthood here. I've been eyeing up Sir Alan's horse. It's going to be mine.
I don't think the horse moves about, you know. It's not like a chessboard. You can't just take the horse. If you're knighted, you get your own horse, mate. You can't just take another knight's horse.
I have checkmated Lord Sugar, and now I get his horse.
I think you have to take him on into some sort of jousting contest in the grounds of Warwick Castle. You have to get your own lance.
I saw a video about this royal picture, and all it was, this video was zooming in on various aspects of the photo with little red circles highlighting things in the photo. And there was about 9 or 10. And I couldn't tell the foggiest difference as to what was supposed to have been altered. And the only suggestion I saw was that because she's had some abdominal issue, that maybe they'd photoshopped out a wheelchair to make her look a little bit less poorly. But I thought, would we care, really? If she's just come out after a surgery, would we be bothered if she was in a wheelchair? Would that offend people?
I don't think so. I mean, I know the royals are very careful about the image that they want to portray, but I think in this day and age, and I think based on her sort of previous record of being fairly sort of open and modern, I don't think that would concern. And also, if they were going to Photoshop out a wheelchair, that this is the royal family, wouldn't they get someone to do it really well rather than, like she said, oh, I've given it a go myself, right? If you can see that there's some issues with it, it'd be like you or me giving Photoshop a bit of a go. Like, you'd be able to see, like, little bits where we haven't quite got it. But if you're Photoshopping out a wheelchair and you're a member of the royal family, like, you'd get the top-notch Photoshoppers in the country to do that, wouldn't you? They wouldn't fuck it up.
Yeah, make them sign an NDA and you're laughing. But, you know, something I learned from you, Trev, as my audio mentor, was that it's far easier to get the audio right when you're recording it so that you don't have to faff around in the edit with loads of fixing things. Yeah. Now, surely, with all the you know, royal staff and skivs and servants they've got, they could have hoisted her out and put her on a regular chair, taken the photo and then put her back in the wheelchair. That would have been far easier. So I'm not sure I believe this particular wacky conspiracy theory.
Absolute bollocks, mate. I don't understand why this is like headline fucking news all day. Got me thinking, though, like, if you could Photoshop yourself into a picture, how would you do it? I'd like to be Photoshopped on the royal balcony, probably at the coronation, just sort of have me in the background with, like, really sort of thumbs up pose, you know, that sort of really cheesy thing. Just stick me on the balcony.
But do you not think people would notice and maybe say, who's that and why is he there?
Yeah, but that would be the point, wouldn't it? Then it'd be headline fucking news all day, wouldn't it? I'd get my little moment in the sun, wouldn't I? Do wonders for the podcast, wouldn't it?
It would. Finally, some listeners. It'd be amazing.
Trev and Ben podcasting royal picture scandal. Or Photoshop me into that photo with, you know, when Prince Harry dressed up as a Nazi. Photoshop me into that. Dressed up as Ava Braun or something.
I thought you were going to say Winston Churchill.
I don't think it was that sort of party. I don't think it was an allied party. I think it was very much a right-wing, racist party. I'm sure there's a picture of him dressed as a Nazi, someone in a Ku Klux Klan outfit. It was that sort of party.
It was a themed fancy dress party, but I can't remember what the theme was.
Right-wing arseholes, probably. But, again, like, don't... I mean, I know he was very young then, but, you know, not a good look, that.
I mean, I don't know what other sort of famous pictures are there from history that I could be sort of photoshopped in the background of. I think I know it's not necessarily a picture as there was moving footage of it, but I think if there was ever sort of a still of the JFK assassination, if I could be sort of photoshopped sort of sneaking away in an alleyway or something like that, just to add another layer.
I'd like to be photoshopped behind the car with a sort of broom, dustpan and brush, picking up bits of his brain.
That's a bit dark.
As we move along. Well, what, too soon?
Yeah. What about with a little remote control, pressing the button, trying to frantically do up the top of the car?
or maybe Photoshop me into the moon landing, and so I beat Neil Armstrong onto it. So I'll push him off the ladder, and I'm first on the moon. I'll get the fucking line right, Neil.
Yeah. Oh, I wonder how much he kicked himself for fucking that line up all those years later.
I don't think he worried too much about it, because it's still a famous line, isn't it? I think you could get away with it because there's all that crackling, and I think you say, no, I said one small step for a man, but if you, yeah, because I said it so quickly, there's crackling. I think you could say, I said it exactly how it should be said. It's everyone's ears are deceived by the noises in the background.
Yeah, and then you could come out and sort of say, well, you know, one, I beat him to the moon, and two, I told him to get his recording audio set up properly down in the first place, and that way we wouldn't need to fix it in post.
The problem with a lot of our ideas for Photoshop is I think we would be found out very easily just by the very nature of our age.
Yes.
Because if I said, oh, I was on the moon landing, they said, well, I mean, you look pretty good for, you know, you'd be went into your 90s by now. You look quite good for your age, Trev. And I go, well, thank you very much. Yes, I use a lot of skin conditioner. What do they call it? Oil of Ulay. Whatever it's called. I use a lot of that.
I mean, there are plenty of people claiming to be these time-travelling TikTokers and YouTube stars. So maybe we could just be time traveling podcasters.
We could be. I mean, I don't think.
All right, then. Well, which modern day scandal would you like to insert yourself into that could realistically be in this timeline? Maybe that's it. Maybe Kate was sitting on you. You were on all fours and she was sat on your back. The royal footstool.
Well, someone probably has to do that job, isn't it? You've got to be there for the roles. If you're called upon, like if it should be like jury service. You know, sometimes you get the letter. It's your month to be the royal footstool.
Yeah, it's just become so commonplace that the royals just sit on commoners. That it was almost a press, and they realised at the last minute, oh shit, the commoners can't ever know that we sit on the poorer classes. So yeah, we're going to have to get in someone to Photoshop Trev Smith out of this photo.
Yeah, particularly like the builder's bum that was sticking out. Yeah, it just wasn't that good a look for the royals. I mean, Kate was actually being sick at the time. That's why they had to Photoshop it. They had to get all of that out.
That's why she's looking a bit peaky.
I mean, you sort of brought up a minor conspiracy theory about the photo.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I have come across... You know how conspiracy theories do come up fairly regularly on this podcast. It's something that we return to every now and again.
And traditionally, you and I aren't really believers in them. We tend to debunk rather than throw fuel on the fire.
Yes. Well, there's a new one I've come across this week. And this one, I just need to warn you, Ben. You could be killed for even talking about this, apparently.
Right. Okay.
So we are putting ourselves at risk by even talking about this conspiracy theory.
Well, we've all got to go somehow, and if it puts this podcast on the map, then I'll take it.
Okay, right. Well, prepare yourself for this. Have you heard of Project Bluebeam?
No. I mean, may I say off the bat, what a great name for a conspiracy theory. Operation Bluebeam. I love it. No, I haven't heard about it. What is it?
Well, as I say, this is a very dangerous thing. Just by talking about it, we could put ourselves into danger, because this is a... an elite group of people. I always like the fact that conspiracy theorists always talk about an elite group of people without actually talking about who they are. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, like, it's nice and vague.
Like the Illuminati. Yeah, but who are the Illuminati? Like, be specific about it. Tell me exactly who they are. If you know that they exist, you must know who they are. But they never do.
That's a good point, yeah.
Now, although I'm only hearing about this now, it was originally uncovered, apparently, in 1994.
Your finger on the pulse of conspiracy theories, Trev.
Well, I think because it's so dangerous to talk about, it's, you know, it's only been reported recently.
Yeah, Ben. A 30-year-old conspiracy theory.
Well, but this is a slow burner, mate. This is a slow burner, and the last 30 years have all been part of the conspiracy to get us used to something. Now, the idea is that the group of elites... They are planning a massive false flag operation in which they will use advanced technology, presumably now AI, to simulate an alien invasion in order to establish a new world order.
Okay.
Apparently part of the process of this was the film Independence Day. That was a way of getting us used to the idea of an alien invasion. Again, how old is that film?
I mean, many, many years old.
But apparently that was all part of the psychological programming to get us used to the idea that there could be an alien invasion. The next part of it was going to be the unearthing of some documents that would change our perception of the reality we live in. So it would confuse us. It would open our minds to the possibility of what could be. So we could therefore believe that aliens would come here and invade our planet.
Well, there have been a lot more, especially in America, I think, sort of government documents sort of accepting that there are alien phenomena in the skies, and that it's almost sort of admitting these things do kind of exist. So maybe there's a bit of that to it, I guess.
They'll never admit that it's aliens, though, would they? They'll say it's unexplained.
The old, we had this conversation a few weeks back with you. They're not UFOs anymore, they're no. UAPs, is it? Unidentified aerial phenomenon? Oh, that's a hard word to say. Unidentified aerial phenomenon.
Manamana. I think it is, yeah. I mean, that is what it is. There'd also be a phase where they would project holographic images into the sky to make us see alien craft and alien invasions. Now, I must just tell listeners that just about 2, maybe 3 weeks ago, we were recording the podcast, and midway through the record, you said to me, Trev, there's... We didn't keep any of this in because it just wasn't worth it. But you said to me, Trev, there's something very odd in the sky outside my house. And it you was. Sent me a photograph of it. And I said, well, it looks just like a carrier bag in the wind. But then you said, no, but it's a long way off. So that wouldn't work in terms of perspective and size. So that wouldn't work. And I said to you, well, what do you think it is? Because it was a perfectly clear sky. It didn't look like a cloud, but it could have been some sort of cloud formation. But maybe, Ben, this was a holographic representation of an alien craft being beamed into the sky to make you believe that there was an alien craft in the sky. Because you did say to me, it's freaking me out a bit, Trev.
To be honest, mate, I think the biggest take-home message of this is that the level of intelligence you think I possess that I'd be unable to say, oh, look, a carrier bag. I would automatically go, yeah. Oh, my God, it's an alien.
Well, I've known you a long time. I've known you a long time. You go, Trev, there's a UFO going to bed. It's a carrier bag.
Oh, yeah. But what you're describing, it sounds less like Independence Day and more like sort of The Wizard of Oz. Like, yeah, it would be like Rishi Sunak, and you pull the curtain back and he's paying no attention to the man behind the curtain operating his little holographic face on the walls, and, you know, Michael Gove and Boris Johnson somewhere behind the scenes, and Dominic Cummings telling us all it's all plausible. It was, you know, just go and test your eyesight, it's fine, pay no attention to the thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't really sound very convincing, all this.
But at what point do they then reveal to us that it is an alien invasion? What, you know, when is this going to be finally unleashed? If they've been slowly doing all these little things, at what point are they going to say, we are now being invaded? Like, when is that going to happen?
So it's also sounding like Alfred Hitchcock who did War of the Worlds?
No, it wasn't Alfred Hitchcock.
Who am I thinking of?
Well, you're probably thinking, are you thinking of the book, the original book? You're thinking of Orson Welles who did the radio
Orson Welles.
Drama.
Yes, the radio drama. Sorry, well, thank you for highlighting my ignorance again. Orson Welles, who did the great radio broadcast of War of the Worlds, which was broadcast legit to suggest that we were being invaded by aliens, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was a drama, but, you know, people fell for it.
So there you go. I think Orson Welles was years ahead of Operation Bluebeam, and unfortunately, the legacy of it was that I've attributed his work to Alfred Hitchcock instead.
Oh, poor Orson Welles, all of that work, all that effort, and then he did Citizen Kane, which was shit. You know, it's a shame, isn't it?
I've never seen Citizen Kane, but I know it's this legendary piece of work, but everyone I've ever met who's seen it says it's shit.
So overrated. Anyway, so overrated.
So what do you think is going to happen with this Operation Bluebeam? Do you think, because you're alleging that it is going to be a hoax, but they're going to sell us it like it's really an alien invasion?
Yeah. I've got a few problems with the conspiracy theory to go through, if you don't mind.
Go on.
To start with, the fact that this is such a long run thing. Like, why do we have to have, like, Independence Day? And they haven't cited other movies, but presumably other alien invasion movies over the years are all part of this process to get us used to it. I mean, how long is it going to go on for? Because also, if you're a member of the Illuminati, I mean, maybe you do play the long, long game. But the chances are these people are going to be getting older. When do they want their complete power? You know, who are they? Are they doing it for their children to have complete power? You know, all of these conspiracy theories, like all the ones that David Icke comes out with, all these Illuminatis, the New World Order. Well, when the fuck is it going to happen? They all said that about COVID. I can't really see a New World Order that's appeared because of COVID, really. You know, but all the conspiracy theories are like, well, they're doing this for a New World Order to control us all. Bollocks. It didn't happen, did it?
You've got to wait a few years, Trev, for all those vaccines to start kicking in with the microchips in our blood to start taking over the brainwaves.
Right, yeah. Again, you've got to wait for it.
Of course you do.
None of this ever fucking happens. All these conspiracies sit there going, oh, that's going to happen. When is it going to happen? Because I don't see it happening. Oh, it's a long game. So who is the beneficiary of all of this shit the conspiracy theorists come up with? Because clearly it's not them themselves, because they'll be dead by the time this happens. Do you know what I mean?
I suppose it's, if it's so you basically gain a mass audience of, dare I say, morons who believe you, and then you can sell them your merchandise and your books and your theories, cash in, and then you're never held accountable because you can always just make up some other reason why none of it's come to fruition. It's the real idiots are those people who give you a date when they say the world's going to end, and then it inevitably doesn't. And then they've got a sort of, oh, yes, we did the math slightly wrong. Then they give you another date, and it doesn't happen. They're the people who are putting a noose around their own neck, making mistakes with themselves. Just always kick it into the long grass sometime in the future and continue to sell that sweet merch.
The other problem I've got with this is, let's say they go through with this, and let's say tomorrow morning I wake up and there's a, like, the royal photo has been bumped to item number 2 on the news, but the headline is alien invasion, but coming up more news on the photograph of Kate. That's really important. But we just thought we'd let you know there's an alien invasion, but now let's go to Buckingham Palace and find out later the photograph. But let's say that I wake up tomorrow morning and there's been this alien invasion. How will that be used to create a new world order? Will it basically be the world, because the world ain't going to come together to fight an alien force? I mean, we can't even get human beings to work together. So presumably all governments are going to have to be in on this thing.
Well, I imagine so. And it would be some sort of race war, but it would be the human race versus the alien race. And there'll be someone cashing in. It'll be like the equivalent of the COVID PPE. There'll be someone selling you some sort of alien survival kit or ammunition, special alien proof ammunition, or blast shields or something.
Some Tory peer or have a company suddenly set up to get a multi-trillion pound contract for anti-alien PPE.
And it'll all go missing or won't work properly.
And then afterwards they'll just say, oh, no, it was a difficult time. Let's move on. Nothing to see here.
And we'll have an inquiry in about 70 years when all the money's been laundered and everyone to be held accountable is dead. Perfect.
But let's just say we get to that point, right? So that they've convinced us all that there's an alien invasion. So suddenly the world will stop. All the other wars will just stop, right? We go, right, well, we better, let's not deal with any other wars because we've got a bigger threat. So let's say we deal with that. Like, what is their outcome? We don't know what their outcome is. Is the outcome that the human race defeats these aliens, and then what? Are we all supposed to bow down to the people that have beaten the aliens? I don't understand how that suddenly controls us. Or do the aliens win, and so we have to kowtow to the aliens, and then that brings in the New World Order, because, as David Icke would say, the elite are already lizards anyway. So, I mean, what is it? It's just nonsense from start to finish.
I don't know why we're assuming that the aliens would be coming hostile. I mean, they might come in peace. I think that the sad indictment on humanity is, if they said we come in peace, before they got to the word peace, we'd have opened fire.
Yeah, but no, I think what you're doing there, Ben, is you've gone to a realistic situation of aliens arriving rather than the conspiracy.
Oh, yes.
We have to assume that they're going to be hostile when they come.
Well, yeah, I've forgotten about that. This was the engineered alien attack, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, somehow someone will be making money off of this somewhere. Absolutely.
Do you think if aliens did come, because I think you're right, I'm not sure they would come initially to invade. I mean, unless they were from a desperate dying planet, as a lot of the sci-fi stuff is, and they need to get rid of humanity to take the planet. But I mean, I'd imagine, like us, like when we go out to explore space, it would just be an adventure, it would be exploration, and they'd come down and they'd sort of say, oh, hello. And then the problem is like you say, we'd fucking fire at them, and then that would turn them hostile. We would actually be the orchestrators of our own downfall, because they probably have superior technology, and some dickhead in America probably would fire a gun at them, and then they'd just laser the fucking shit out of the planet.
Yeah, because if they've got technology, like, as you say, which is capable of interplanetary travel across the galaxy, which we can't do, then presumably they're going to have a slightly better weapon than some hick wielding a shotgun somewhere in the middle of Texas. By the way, we shouldn't pick on the Americans. Someone in this country would quite happily do it. I think most countries are full of idiots who would open fire if they had to or wanted to.
When I said a dickhead in America, I didn't mean like just some bloke with a gun. I meant someone like Donald Trump. You know, he'd be proud at the time and he'd just go gung-ho for it, wouldn't he? Rather than negotiate, he'd just want to blast him out the sky. Unless, of course, he could see some benefit for himself. I mean, he's probably part of the conspiracy. He's probably a member of the Illuminati himself.
Yes, but what about the ARA fight back, the Alien Rifle Association, where you have to pry their laser beams out of their cold, green, cold dead hands.
Here's a question: if there was an alien invasion, where would you hide?
Now, what's my goal here? Is it to sort of blend in as into part of a peaceful society? Because I'm sure there would be pockets of society which would set themselves up as peaceful.
Yeah, I'm sure there would be some, but I mean, I think this is an initial response to an alien invasion. So let's say the conspiracy is happening; it's come on the news. You've had the alert to your phone, alien invasion, and you're panicking. Where would you go to hide?
I've got a feeling I wouldn't go too much further than I currently am, because I think they'd be intelligent beings. They're going to hit the major cities first. So London, which you're fairly close to, you're in trouble. I'm a bit further out in the sticks. So I think hopefully by the time they've dealt with the sort of the Prime Minister, you know, London, the sort of central hub of the UK. And that isn't me thinking that's the way it is. That just basically is the way it is. Sorry, up north. Then hopefully by the time they get to us, and good luck for the people up north, because they're safe too in my book.
I can imagine the Scousers getting really upset. Hey, we're here as well, you know. Come fucking laser us.
So the aliens don't want to start on the Scousers. A world of trouble.
Calm down, Zog.
But I think, hopefully, once the initial takeover period or kickoff has happened, by the time they get out to sort of mid-Sussex, they might have calmed down a bit.
Mind you, War of the Worlds, H.G. Wells' initial book, the initial invasion happens in, it might even be Sussex.
Is H.G. Wells different to Orson Welles?
H.G. Wells wrote the book, War of the Worlds. Orson Welles did the radio adaptation of
What are the odds of that? Two Wellses doing it? Well, you can see why I got confused and thought that Hitchcock did it, can't you?
No, I can't see why you thought Hitchcock did it. He's not got Wells in his name at all. So that, to me, I can see you get confused between H.G. and Orson Welles. I get that. But Hitchcock, no.
I couldn't pick between the two Wells.
Well, no, it's difficult, isn't it? There's Tunbridge Wells. Yeah, there's lots of Wells.
There you go. I'm hired in Tunbridge Wells, where neither Orson nor H.G. will ever find me.
Well, here's the thing. I think you are right to think about not being in the centre of a big city. There was a thing this week. Now, this is a slightly different scenario. This is if there was a zombie apocalypse. But I think an alien invasion zombie apocalypse is sort of a similar thing, isn't it? It's an apocalyptic event, potentially.
Well, it depends, again, what kind of zombies we're talking about. Your typical George A. Romero slow-moving zombies.
Right.
I'm fairly sure I'm right with that. Attributing that reference to that particular
person. Well,
I'm giving
you person. That because it's not my wheelhouse.
Dawn of the Dead, slow-moving zombies, I think, slow reanimation, things like that.
I didn't even know there were different categories of zombies. See, I'm learning something. I find the whole zombie genre incredibly tedious. I really do. I do. Oh, it's another fucking zombie movie. I mean, I didn't realise there was different styles of zombies. I thought they all just walked out with their arms in front of them looking for brains, but they're so slow they're never going to fucking get any. Ridiculous genre.
A bizarrely masochistic approach to the podcast you've taken. You've come to me with, Ben, what would you do during a zombie apocalypse or a zombie invasion? By the way, I find the subject of zombies incredibly tedious.
I do. I'm sorry. I do.
Well, this was your idea.
It's like people keep talking to me. Have you ever seen The Walking Dead? It's like, do you know, I saw 5 minutes of it once and I thought, it's not for me. This, how you can make that last more than one season, I do not know. But anyway, I'm sure it's very good. If you like, I'm still told it's very good, and maybe one day I'll relent and give it a go. But anyway, let's just say this is a zombie apocalypse. This is all based on different categories of data, including vulnerability, hideouts, supplies, safety, mobility, and hazards. And if you're in the UK, the best place to be is a place called Uttlesford in Essex, best known as the place where Jamie Oliver grew up. Now, I've always thought there was something slightly zombie about Jamie Oliver, so...
Mine was going to be food-themed as well, but I want to get back to that specific place in a second, but I was going to say my local supermarket, because presumably they got big, heavy shutters.
Yeah.
It's full of food, even if the fridge power goes, it's full of shelf-sustainable food for a long time. So it's secure, can't break into it easily. That'll keep the zombies out. I've got plenty of food, toilets. I think that's a good shot.
The thing is, though, I mean, I have watched some zombie movies, and not all zombie movies. Like, it's a Stephen King book made into a film. I think it's called The Mist. And they're all in a supermarket. And you think they're all safe in there, but you ever watch any of these things, and often they end up in a supermarket. I'd say about a third of the people in the supermarket get killed off in the process of a film. So I don't know if a supermarket is the safest place to be, because all of the badness always seems to sort of focus on the supermarket themselves.
Well, I think it's a great idea on paper, but what you've got to factor in is the other human survivors who are going to mess it up for you.
Yeah.
Because the sort of brain capacity of a zombie isn't going to be able to sort of realise what's going on and force their way into a supermarket like a survivor would. So I think it would be the other human survivors having exactly the same idea as me. They're the ones more likely to get to me or ruin my chances than the actual zombies.
I suppose it depends on whether the zombie's got a nectar card.
So go on then, genius. But by the way, before we get to your suggestion of where you'd go, why was it this very specific place in Essex?
Well, it's apparently because it features remote farmhouses, abundant food supplies, and handy road links. So presumably after the zombie apocalypse or alien invasion, whatever disaster we're talking about, you could then escape the area. Because how long does a zombie apocalypse last? That's the other thing I don't understand in these films. Like, how does it always come to an end? But is a zombie apocalypse is a finite thing generally, isn't it?
Usually the army get a grip on it, don't they, eventually? They end?
Because I'm assuming that an area... The zombies just pass through an area. They're just constantly moving forward, are they, zombies, generally?
Well, I think it's... I think that's the scary thing about zombies. It's the relentless march. They might move slowly, but they just keep bloody going until everyone's a zombie. So,
but they're not looking to occupy... Like, if there was an alien invasion, they might want to occupy... Like, they might want to occupy London, right? But zombies wouldn't want to occupy London. They just move through. They take whatever... I don't know, suck the blood, eat the brains, whatever they do, and then move.
It's vampires, you think, you'll suck the blood.
But do they just eat brains? Is that all zombies do? Is that their main thing?
I'm sure there are variations, but I think generally zombies are after the brain, yes.
Okay, so they'll just be moving through. For them, it's not a place to occupy, whereas I think with the aliens, they'd be looking to probably occupy an area, wouldn't they?
I don't think zombies move on once they've established the area's clear or they can't find any more, and then they go and, try and find neighbouring Kent and then search through there. I think they pretty much just sort of amble around. The fact is they're everywhere. It's like a slow spreading infection.
But then what happens when there's no brains left for them? What happens then?
Well, I don't know. Either the humans get a grip on society and kill them off, or they'll eventually conquer, I suppose. So,
but can they survive without brains? I mean, I don't understand.
They're undead, aren't they?
But we have... Okay, so then we just have a population of undead. That's the ultimate goal. I don't know what the end goal for the zombie is. I don't understand what they're gaining out of it. Because if there's no more live humans left, if there's no more brains to have, then you're just lumbering around for eternity with your arms outstretched. Like, what is the point? Like, they're not going to have a society, are they? They're not going to have a hierarchical society with a leader. Like, zombies, they're all equal, right? They're all just...
Yeah, but a virus doesn't have a point, does it? Other than to spread and mutate and get itself as far as it can. That's all. You could say that about any sort of disease or virus. What's its end goal? But they don't all have an end goal. It just is.
Yeah.
What's your genius survival tip then?
No, but what I'm saying is that a virus is a real thing. I'm just saying, in the genre of the zombie, what is the goal? Like, I don't understand. Again, I don't get the genre. I don't understand what the goal of the zombie is. It just seems a ridiculous thing.
What do you think they're going to try and mass create and repopulate the earth? Have little zombie babies, send them to school, get a little zombie degree?
Well, maybe, but no one ever says what their goal is. Like, you know, if they wipe out all of the living beings, they're going to have a zombie parliament? Like, no one ever says what they're going to do, do they?
What do you mean no one's... Who would say that they can't speak?
But the writers of this fiction, the writers of zombie fiction, never explain the zombie's goal in its life or death, whatever you want to... Do you know what I mean? Like, they never explain it. They just, the zombies are here, they're wandering around, they're looking for brains. What happens if they win?
No, because that's not the point of zombies. If you want that, what you want is a war film, you know, a political war film with an invasion. The scary thing about zombies is the ceaseless march for brains, the lust for blood and brains. It's not because they've got a point.
But when there's no more brains or blood to lust after, what then for the zombie?
I don't think that's what the scary thing about the zombie invasion is. Will they achieve their goals?
You can't answer my question. You see this, how tedious the genre is. It's just an endless conversation. Well, because there's always going to be humans, because no one's ever thought about it, because no one's ever taken the genre to the nth degree like I think it should be.
Okay, so I can't let you off the hook without hearing your great survival tips. I've said my local supermarket, which I realise would be undone fast because everyone would have the same idea. Yeah. I don't really want to go to Jamie Oliver's hometown because I don't know why that's going to help me. Imagine all the crashed cars that would immediately block the nice roads around the area as well. So what's your, Trev Smith, what's your tip for getting out or surviving the zombie apocalypse?
Or an alien invasion.
The alien invasion.
Okay, well, I think if there was an alien invasion or a zombie apocalypse, I mean, I think I'm probably in a good place. I was told this information this week that Croydon is one of the most depressing places in the UK. It's a very depressing...
Amen to that, yes.
It's a very depressing place to live. So I think any alien or zombie that comes to Croydon will, in a very quick amount of time, start to feel incredibly depressed. The aliens will think, do you know what? I can't... Like, they'd be off. They're going, fuck this. It's so depressing.
zombies sort of wander into the town centre and think, oh, we've already done here. Let's go.
Zombies would, particularly like the... people won't know this if you don't know Croydon. There's a little place called Broad Green, which is sort of midway between where I live and the centre of Croydon. And that area in particular, like, it's a really weird little area. And they put recently, I don't know why they put this, they put little seats on the street. It's not like there's any view to look at apart from the main road, but those seats are often occupied by people completely off their tits or something. So the zombies would arrive and think, oh shit, we've already done this, let's move on. Move on, lads. So I think being in Croydon is actually not a bad shout.
I mean, what are those seats for? Are these going to be some new tax? It's going to be like the new ULEZ, the ultra lazy emission zones. If you want to sit down for 5 minutes, you've got to pay to eat Carter Fiver.
I don't know why they put the seats there. It's the most inappropriate place to have seats. There's nothing to look at. Why anyone would think, oh yeah, this is, people would want to sit down here. It's not even really many shops there. I don't know. It seems the most... So all those seats now are just full of people completely off their face on one thing or another. So I think that's where I'd head. I'd head down. I'd blend in with them, and then the zombies would come and they go, oh, well, nothing to see. Move on. We've done our work. The aliens would arrive and think, Christ almighty, this is depressing. They'd fuck off. So I think actually I'm in the best place.
You see, I'm slightly worried now. I made that flippant joke about taxing people for sitting down. And now I'm slightly worried that if a Tory ever hears this, like, that's a bloody good idea.
Yeah, or just don't give Khan any more ideas before the election, mate. We're talking about survival, talking about getting through tough events in your life.
Yeah.
I was reading this week about a man called Frayn Selak. He's gone through quite a lot in his life, and I thought you could help me come to a conclusion about this, because I can't work out whether he's the luckiest man or the unluckiest man to live.
I mean, that's two completely opposite ends of the spectrum. I would have thought it should have been obvious. What's happened to him?
Well, we'll start off with the first thing that happened in his life. He was on a train and there was a freak accident and the train was catapulted into a river. Very bad thing, but he was one of the very few survivors. He was able to swim to the shore. He only ended up with a broken arm and hypothermia for his troubles. And he survived a terrible event that cost a lot of people their lives.
That's terrible.
But he was involved in it. Was he lucky or unlucky?
Well, I mean, that seems like quite an obvious thing for me to say. That sounds incredibly unlucky. Surviving, I suppose. Yes. Oh, I see the conundrum now.
Yes.
I'd still chalk that up to incredible bad luck.
Okay.
With a silver lining, I would say.
Okay. Well, the next year, he was on a plane and there was an accident that saw a door come detached from the aircraft, and the aircraft then plummeted to the ground. Again, accident. Many people lost their lives in the accident. But Selak, he was found in a haystack and woke up in hospital only rattled, none the worse for wear, no major injuries to speak of.
Well, I mean, the odds of surviving a plane crash are minute. I see where this is going. I suppose that, so that's a train crash and a plane crash, and he survived them both. Someone seems to be smiling on him, so I would still say he would probably rather neither event took place.
Yes.
But lucky to be alive. But I'd say still, on the scheme of things, this is some bad luck.
Okay. Well, then a couple of years later, he was on a bus.
Oh, for God's sake.
It's another fatal accident. The bus plunges into a river, but he came out largely unscathed.
Now, I would say, right, if he made the news after the train crash.
Yeah.
Then he'd have definitely made the news after the plane crash. Now, if I was on the bus and it pulled over and he got on,
yeah,
I'd get off at that point, wouldn't you?
I think you'd think, yeah, fuck this. A couple of years later, he was out and about again and his car's fuel tank exploded whilst he was on the motorway. He barely escaped with just a few little bruises. Even though petrol was spewing all over the place, there were flames everywhere, he got out pretty much unscathed yet again.
Wow. I mean, was he on his own in the car, do we know? Or
as far as I'm aware, he was in the car on his own.
I mean, is this a book people could be interested in reading? I'm just trying to think at this point. He's had a lot of incredible bad luck. Yeah. Lucky to be alive to the nth degree. But now can he try and capitalise on this and sell his story, make a book? Would you buy that book?
I don't know. I mean, this was in 1973 when the car incident happened. He then had a relatively quiet couple of decades.
I was going to say, if he was to write a book, his computer would probably explode.
Well, then in 1995, he was knocked down by a bus. A lot of transport issues this man's having, right?
Wow.
And then in 1996, the final incident of his disaster-struck life, a truck came hurtling towards his car as he drove around a mountain road. He then had to leap out of his car, only to watch in horror as the car exploded. But this is, I mean, if you watch this in a film, you go, well, no. I mean, after the third thing, you go, well, it's nonsense, isn't it? He also, can I just say, he also won the lottery and won £600,000 as well.
Oh, so, come on. This was too far-fetched for a film about three accidents ago, but now this is getting stupid.
So the question is, was he the luckiest man to ever live or the unluckiest man to ever live?
Well, many people will go through this life and reach the end of it and be completely unnoteworthy to society. He has left an interesting story, a legacy. So long as he's not been traumatised beyond belief by some of these things, then I'd say it sounds sick, but I'd say that's quite lucky. What do you think?
It depends on your outlook on life. I mean, I'm very much a glass half empty kind of guy. So I would look at two of those incidents and I'd be thinking, oh, well, that's just fucking typical. It would happen to me, wouldn't it? Of course it would happen to me. Fucking fate. Fate.
At a certain point, wouldn't you start thinking, right, so I've had the train crash, I've had the plane crash, I've had the bus crash. What are the chances of it happening again? Surely I can go out again and it'll be fine this time. Or would you think, nah, sod that, I'm never leaving the house again?
Well, the interesting thing is none of those things have happened to me, and I don't leave the house now just in case. Well, there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Before we go, as always, some recommendations for you. What you got for us this week, Ben?
First one I've got is a film recommendation, and it's from my dad, who's seen this film.
Okay.
Now, I must admit, I saw this film advertised on the side of a bus a few months ago, and I thought it was an early April Fool's joke. I thought it was a prank. I thought it was a spoof film. I thought this had to be.
I don't know whether this is a bit of psychic abilities coming up. I've got a feeling I know what you're going to say. And because it's a film that's being advertised at the moment that just annoys me. Just the title. So I'm going to throw this out there and see if this is the film that your dad's recommending. And no offence, Big Jeff, if you like it, but it looks dreadful if it's the film I'm thinking of. The Beekeeper.
Jason Statham is The Beekeeper, like, is the correct answer.
Isn't every film he does the something? Like, isn't he like the mechanic, the beekeeper, the toilet cleaner?
The transporter,
But he's basically, it's the same film over and over again.
Basically, I don't know any spoilers for him. My dad said it's basically nonsense, but it's...
of course it is, it's a Jason Statham film.
He did say it's... If you like action films, he said it's basically a start-to-finish action... Jason Statham's landlady, she falls victim to a phishing scam and is robbed of over $2 million.
Brilliant already.
Which belongs to a charity organisation she manages. Devastatingly, she has a sad ending, and then he decides to avenge her passing.
Is she killed by a lot of bees?
No.
Are there any bees involved in the fucking...
So Jason Statham goes on a rampage, and he avenges the scammers, which is another reason my dad likes it. It avenges these horrible scammers who bilked her out of $2 million. And he is apparently, for no discernible reason, a beekeeper.
Amazing.
So, my dad said it's nonsense, but if you like scammers' revenge and if you like Jason Statham kicking the shit out of people for an hour and a half, there you go. The Beekeeper. My other recommendation is a podcast we've previously recommended.
Yeah,
I was very pleased to get a notification on my phone this afternoon, in fact, to say that season 7 of Brian and Roger, the podcast, is coming back soon.
That is exciting. That there is very exciting. I love Brian and Roger.
You see, I start low with the Beekeeper and then I finish on a nice high.
Brilliant. I'm very excited by that. I'm going to recommend a couple of things. First of all, a documentary that was on Channel 5 this week, the Titan sub-disaster, minute by minute. So it follows the story of the ill-fated sub that went down to try and visit the Titanic. Yeah, it's a sad documentary, obviously, because it's a very sad outcome, but it's an interesting documentary nonetheless. The other thing I'm going to recommend is a lovely little film I watched on Sky Movies at the moment, called The Unlikely Pilgrimage of Harold Fry. And
I feel like I've heard of this.
Have you heard of it? It's a charming little film. I think that should be my new little catchphrase. I used it last week. It's a charming little... Barry Norman had... and why not? And he's pickled onions. I could have... It's a charming little movie and some gherkins. It stars Jim Broadbent, Penelope Wilton's in it. I love anything with Penelope Wilton in anyway. And it's the story of a man called Harold. He's an ordinary man just passing through life until he goes to post a letter one day to someone from his past who's now in a hospice, and he just decides to keep walking to get to her. It's a nice film. There's some little funny moments in it. There's very moving moments in it. Like I say, charming little film.
Okay, it sounds a bit of a tearjerker. Is that fair to say? Or...
At times, maybe, yeah. I mean, it's some quite dark moments in it, but I very much enjoyed it.
Okay, well, maybe start with that and then move on to The Beekeeper.
So there we are. That's it. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us anytime. We're at Trev and Bill on X, and we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.